Because what you got is
The TA from Danny's management class small group starts out the class by introducing herself as Andrea and giving them the same overview they got from the main lecture about what the purpose of the small group is. Then she says, "You're going to be spending a lot of time together this semester, so we're going to start with introductions. We'll go around the room, tell us your name, where you're from, and why you're at Wharton." She gestures at the boy next to her to start. "Aaron," he says with a drawl. He's wearing cargo shorts and a t-shirt, and has light brown hair curling out from under his hat. "I'm from Dallas. I'm planning to join my family sporting good business." The boy next to him, in jeans and a plain black v-neck, his body language also more pared down than Aaron's, says, "Caleb, Monroeville, I've always been interested in the working of organizations." "Kayla," is the next person, a girl who leans forward and speaks with the calm certainty of a person who knows who she is. "I'm from Pittsburgh. I've done a lot of volunteer work and I want to work in nonprofit development." The girl next to her smiles at the room, everything about her, from her clothes to her smile, more casual than Kayla. "I'm Sarah. I'm from San Rafael, California. I'm part of a group of women gamers, and we want to start our own video game company. I wasn't interested in development, so I'm going to business school, and everyone else is doing computer science." "Hunter," says the boy next to her, expensive haircut and designer jeans. "I'm from New Haven, Connecticut. I'm planning to get my MBA at Wharton, so undergrad here makes sense." Zach is next to him. Similar, but less polished. "I grew up in Philly. I'm planning to go into banking." Danny says when it's his turn. "I'm from Gatineau, Quebec, but I've been here in Philly for 10 years. I used to play hockey." A couple of the kids look at him with more attention. "But I've always been interested in finance. My youngest son is still in school here, so I didn't want to leave to go to school." The boy on his other side says, "I'm Connor from Portland," with a lazy smile that fits with Portland's reputation. "I love baking, and I want to learn enough about business to open my own vegan bakery." The next person, a tan girl with freckles, says, "Caitlin, I'm from Australia. I've always wanted to study in the States, and this was a good choice." The last person is a girl in perfectly fitting, expensive clothes, who says, "Hi, I'm Taylor. I'm from Philly, too, and I have what it takes to make other people money. I just need the structured learning and connections Wharton can provide." Once Taylor's done, Andrea continues on with their discussion topic for the day. It is a lot like training camp, although Danny might not have made that comparison if Claude hadn't brought it up. They're getting to know each other. See how they fit together as a group. Danny judges his participation against how he would approach training camp and watches the others to see if he can answer Claude's question about who the captains are. Leaders tend to emerge even from a group of leaders. Danny's idly flipping through the takeout menus when his phone rings. He glances at the screen and then asks Claude, "How was camp?" when he answers. Claude groans.
"I don't remember being this tired during camp."
Danny laughs. "Time blurs your memory, and you're getting older."
"Fuck you,"
Claude chews back.
"Even my rookie is tired."
"Huh," Danny says with a shrug. "He's not used to it yet."
"If I'm any measure of it, he won't ever be used to it,"
Claude says.
"I think I'm even too tired to eat."
Danny laughs again. "I haven't eaten and the boys are with Sylvie. Want me to bring you dinner?"
"Yes, please."
Claude pauses.
"For both of us?"
"Yes," Danny says. "I'll feed your rookie too." They figure out what they want, and then Danny calls it in, picks it up, and takes it over to Claude's. The door is unlocked, so he just lets himself in, and goes up the stairs to find Claude and his rookie sprawled out on the couches, watching TV. "Hey," Claude says, tipping his head over the back of the couch. He waves at the rookie. "Danny, rookie, rookie, Danny." Danny holds out his hand to the rookie. "Danny Briere?" "Yeah," the rookie shakes his hand. "I know, I mean..." Danny ignores Claude's laughter. The rookie takes a deep breath and says, "John Michael Di Gregorio." "Nice to meet you," Danny says. He cuffs Claude lightly across the back of his head for continuing to laugh. "Don't get up." He brings them plates and forks from the kitchen and nudges Claude over to make room on the couch. "It's Monday. Did you figure out who's going to make it?" "I'm in business school," Danny explains to John Michael. "I think they're all going to make it. They all got into Wharton, and they have solid reasons for being there." He takes a bite out of his pasta. Claude says, "Tell me who the captains are." "I told you," Danny says, "they're all captains." He knows what Claude means, though, so he also tells him, "Kayla's going to be the leader of our group. She has a personality for it. Some of the other ones are going to have to grow into it a little." He tells Claude and John Michael about the rest of his class while they eat, and then asks them about training camp and gets the rundown on who the captains in their group are. John Michael gets up when they're done and takes plates, forks, and containers to the kitchen. Then he picks up his phone off the coffee table and says, "I'm going to crash. Nice to meet you." "You too," Danny says, and turns to Claude to find him laughing. "I think he's giving us some privacy," Claude says after they hear the click of John Michael's door closing. Claude pushes into Danny's face and kisses him. "Want to take advantage of it?" Danny kisses back for a couple of minutes before he has to pull away and laugh. "I'm in college and you're in training camp, and we're making out on the couch," he explains, and then he has Claude chuckling too. "We could go to my room," Claude suggests. "I have class tomorrow," Danny says with real regret, "and I have a writing assignment I still need to go over." Claude makes a face, but then he leans in to kiss Danny gently. "Thanks for dinner." "You're welcome." Danny stands and pats down his pockets to make sure he has his wallet, phone, and keys. "Next time, it's your turn." He leaves, with Claude still grinning after him. Danny's on his way into econ on Wednesday morning when someone calls his name. He turns, and a hand waves at him. "Sarah," he says when the girl attached to the hand reaches him. She grins at him. "Right, I was hoping someone from our section would also be in this. This class is going to be a killer without a study group, and since we're going to spend time together anyway, it makes sense." She looks past him and calls, "Caleb!" Danny turns to smile at Caleb, who nods at both of them. "Awesome," Sarah says. "I was just telling Danny we should be a study group." "Sure," Caleb says, and he gestures them through the door. "Where are we sitting?" "Fourth row," Sarah suggests, and barely waits for them to nod before she leads them down to a span of empty seats in the fourth row. They've barely sat down before Hunter jostles his way into their row and sits down next to Danny. "Oh, good," Sarah says. "You can be in our study group, too." Hunter takes off his sunglasses and squints at her. "You're too cheerful for a 9 a.m. class." Then, to Danny, he says, "You played hockey? That's seriously how you're going to introduce yourself?" Danny's not sure where this is going, so... "It's true," seems to be the best answer. Hunter snorts. "You played hockey, you." And here he points at Danny, scored a minute to go into Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final to tie the game so Claude Giroux could win it in overtime. He looks past Danny and Sarah and Caleb. You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you? Hockey? Sarah deadpans. Caleb shrugs. It was good? Hunter sighs. Yes, it was good. I can't believe you're going to business school now. I was bored, Danny says with a slight smile, and I really am interested in all of this. Sarah leans over to catch their attention. That means you're going to be good under pressure, right? That's good. We'll need you in our study group. You too, she says to Hunter, if you want. Hunter looks the three of them over. I suppose, he says. You can't be complete idiots if you got into Wharton. Sarah stares at him for a second before she says, dryly, thanks for the endorsement. And then everyone quiets down for the lecture. The whole idea of the management class is that they do a project for a local nonprofit, so the lecture section of the second week of school is taken up with representatives from local organizations presenting their case for why each group should choose them. Their job in recitation the next Monday is to work as a group to rank the projects in the order they want to work on them. Put Jup at the top of our list, Zach says. The children's hospital, he explains to the people looking confused. They do good work. No way, Taylor says. We have to think strategically. Everyone's going to want Jup. We're not just choosing the organizations. We're also competing against the other sections. The clinic, Hunter says. There's a pause and he looks around the room and shrugs. A couple of you are gay or bi, right? Personal interests should push that up the list. And it might not for the other groups. When there's another moment of silence, he sighs and says, I'm not stereotyping. My best friend's gay. I know how to be an ally. I think we're going about this the wrong way, Kayla says when no one else picks up the topic. Taylor is right that we have to think strategically. So let's think strategically about what we can do. We should match our skills with what they need from us. Like if none of us has actually created an educational program, Connor says, maybe we don't want to choose Chubb. Exactly. Kayla looks around the room. I've done fundraising before. Anyone else have experience that matches what any of these groups need? I've been involved in a lot of small business marketing conversations, Aaron says. Kayla gets up and writes Aaron, marketing, and Kayla, fundraising, on the board at the front of the room. Does cooking for bake sales count? Connor asks, and Kayla writes it down on the board. I've been part of a lot of charity events, Danny says. Before anyone else can contribute, Hunter says, we have Danny. And everyone either looks at Danny or Hunter, who rolls his eyes. Does no one pay attention to sports? Danny's a Philadelphia celebrity. We put him on a fundraising event, and we get press coverage and a lot more money for the organization. Does that count as cheating? Caitlin asks. Wouldn't it be worse to have an advantage and not use it? Maybe, Caleb says, we should ask Danny how he feels about that. Everyone else quiets, and they all look at Danny. This is our project, Danny says, and we should all have a part in it, but yes, if you want to use my name, you can do that. Kayla writes, Danny, fundraising, name recognition on the board. Anyone else? No one answers, and she taps to the board and goes back to her seat. So we're looking at fundraisers as our top choices. If we're talking about things other than interest in the cause, Caleb says, let's talk about accessibility. I work, so long bus rides are going to be hard for me to schedule. I drive to campus, Danny says. I can drive people to the client site. And I have a Zipcar membership, Hunter says. If Danny can take 5 people, Danny nods. That's 10 of us, and we don't have to worry about the bus. Then we are back to what we want, Sarah says with a nod to Taylor, while thinking about what other groups are going to want. The fundraisers, Taylor says, are the homeless shelter, the preschool, and the food program. Management 100 does a fundraiser for the food program every year, Zach says. He shrugs when everyone looks at him. I'm from here. I've heard about it. I don't know if that makes it more or less attractive to other groups. The preschool still has the kid angle, Aaron says. That will probably put it higher on people's list. Is anyone going to want to take on the homeless shelter? Kayla asks. It's important, but not very glamorous. Anna's done some volunteering at a homeless shelter, Caitlin says. Her group might want it. I really want to do a bake sale, Connie says. But if we do the food program, we're going to set a new standard for what they can get out of this class, if Danny's name is really that big of a draw. Do we want to do that to future groups? Hunter rolls his eyes, but it makes everyone else look thoughtful. What if we do homeless shelter, preschool, food program? Sarah asks. There's probably less competition for the shelter than for the preschool, and if we end up with the food program, it's still a fundraiser, and we'll just raise the bar for next year. Nobody objects, and Sarah gets up to write on the board. You'll want to rank all of them, Andrea says. There's no guarantee you'll get one of your top three. The clinic's next, Caleb says. Aaron has marketing experience and the personal interest angle, too. He nods at Hunter, and Sarah writes it on the board. That just leaves the educational programs. Chop next, Danny says. I've worked with them before, and Zach wanted them higher on the list. And that's the mentoring program last, Sarah says, writing it down. They all look at the list. Anything anyone would change? Kayla asks. I think we're good, Connie says when everyone's silent. That was easy. We're going to rock this thing. High five! He actually does high five Caitlin, who's sitting next to him, and everyone relaxes into grins and laughter. Danny's used to watching draft pick negotiations and lotteries. The selection process for which group ends with which project doesn't seem all that complicated in comparison. Half the groups have Chop at the top of their list, and the preschool in their top two. One of the other groups has the clinic as their first choice. The group Caitlin leans over and says is Anna's group has the homeless shelter as their third choice. In the end, it's not that tough for Danny's group. The two groups with first choices no one else shared get their picks. And there's a combined negotiation and fairness formula to assign the others. They get the homeless shelter fundraiser first thing and sit back and watch the way the other teams get assigned. The class discussion that follows is all about decision making, both how groups made their lists and how projects were divided out to groups. Danny's group gets called on first, since they were one of the only groups that got their first choice without any hassle. Taylor suggested we think strategically, Connie says. So we thought about what other groups would want. And Kayla suggested we think about our skills, Taylor says. Our group has people who've worked in fundraising before, so that helped narrow down our top choices. Someone from the other group, the one that ended up with the clinic, says, we started with what we wanted. One of McKenna's moms is a doctor and the other one's a nurse, and she convinced us helping out an LGBT health clinic would be a good thing. The other groups either didn't think strategically the way Danny's group did, or they started with what they wanted, and they just all wanted the child-related projects. High five! Connor says at the end of class, and he does actually go around and high-five the whole group. It gets them all laughing, and almost everyone joins in to high-five each other. We definitely have the best group, Hunter says, just a little too loud for a classroom where the rest of the class hasn't all left yet. Modest, too, Sarah says, which diffuses the tension a little, and their group splits up, with Taylor calling a reminder after them that they're meeting tomorrow afternoon. Caleb and Sarah catch up to Danny in the hallway. "Hunter's a jerk," Sarah says cheerfully. "Too bad he's probably going to be good at this." "We're going to lunch," Caleb says, which means Danny doesn't have to step into that conversation. "Wanna come with us?" "Yes," Danny says. "Where are we going?" "Away from campus," Sarah says, "if you both have time." "I don't have class until 2, Danny says, and Caleb says, "I work at 3. "Perfect." Sarah leads them out of the door. "I love it here, but sometimes you just have to get away." They wander off campus to a place Sarah promises has great burgers, and they get a booth near the back and a couple of menus. Their waiter does a double take that means he recognizes Danny, but he continues on with his welcoming spiel and takes their drinks orders. They take a couple of minutes to look at their menus, and when they've all decided and set them down, Sarah turns a sharp look on Danny. "Does that happen to you a lot?" Caleb looks between them. "Does what happen?" "Getting recognized by waiters." Danny shrugs. "Sometimes." "That must be so weird." "It was at first," Danny admits. "But that was a long time ago, and I've been here for 10 years, so I'm used to it now." Their waiter comes back with sodas and water and takes their orders for burgers and fries. "So," Sarah says, "I know we're all taking econ and management, but what else are you taking?" They talk about classes for a while. Caleb and Sarah both look unimpressed at Danny's choice of writing seminar, while Caleb's biology class sounds interesting enough that Danny notes it down on his phone as something he could use to fulfill his science requirement before the subject changes to their social lives. "It's kind of strange if you think about it," Sarah says. "You meet all these people in your classes and you're supposed to become friends with them just because of that. You might not even have anything in common with them outside of that one tiny shared experience." "Isn't that how most friendships are formed?" Caleb asks. "No." Sarah waves a fry to make her point. "Most of my friends are people I met through the gaming community. We have things in common because we like the same things." She turns to Danny. "That must have happened to you. Friends because you played hockey." "Yes," Danny says. "Sometimes. It's not automatic. There are plenty of people I didn't become friends with, even though we loved hockey and had the shared experience of playing together. And I've made friends other places. Other parents I met through the boys' school, or people I've worked on charity events with." "Shared experience," Caleb says. "Shared interest," Sarah shoots back. "A little of both," Danny says with a chuckle. "That seems to work with my boys and their friends too." "How old are your boys?" Caleb asks. 18, 17, and 15. 18? Sarah says. "When you said boys, I was imagining little kids, not people our age. Can you take us seriously for the same age as your kids?" "Yes." Danny smiles at them. "One of the ways hockey makes this easier. Rookies were always about your age, so I'm used to it." "I guess," Sarah says, "as long as you don't expect us to listen to you just because you're old enough to be our dad." "No," Danny says, "when it comes to all this," he gestures at them and beyond, meaning the campus and the whole college experience, "I'm just as new to it as you are." Their entire group makes the trip from campus to the homeless shelter for their first meeting with Joanna, the director. She takes them on a tour of the shelter and notes what they're hoping to use the money from the fundraiser for. "It's a little harder sell," she says, "because we don't have one specific project we're trying to fund. We're just trying to cover operating costs over the winter. Winter is the most dangerous time for the homeless, especially here where it gets so cold. Every year, people get sick or die because they don't have anywhere warm to go. The more money we can bring in, the more people we can help. Most of the money will go to food, blankets, coats. We also need to pay our utility bills and have enough staff on hand. I've been looking at your marketing materials, Kayla says. Some of your staff used to be clients? Yes, Joanna says with a smile. We have a couple of programs in place to connect our guests with services to help them get off the street. There are chronically homeless who will never get there, and we do our best with them too. But some people can move on. Just about half our staff members have been our guests, and fully three-quarters of our overnight staff are former guests. Joanna leads them around the facility and into a room with a circle of chairs. This is one of the group meeting rooms. Most of our space is dedicated to guest services, so this is as close to a conference room as we've got. Joanna gestures them into chairs. We've done silent auction dinners for the last few years, but we're also open to any ideas you might have. A silent auction and dinner is just like the kind of thing we were thinking about, Hunter says. Danny is a local celebrity, and he's agreed to let us use his name to promote a fundraiser. Oh? Joanna raises her eyebrows at Danny. I used to play for the Flyers. I've only been retired for a year and a half, so people should remember me. They will remember him, Hunter says. And is going to help us sell tickets and get auction donations. Well, Joanna says, that's good. She passes around stapled packets of paper. The top page is our budget for this project, and the rest of it is information about what we've done in previous years. Kayla's the one with the most fundraising experience, so she takes care of asking most of the questions, while the rest of them take notes. They meet as a group to make a list of tasks, and then a list of potential donors for both support, for the event itself, and for the silent auction. One of your signed jerseys, Sarah says to Danny. Hunter eyes them speculatively. Or, he says, maybe something more personal. Like what? Sarah seems much more suspicious of it than Danny. I don't know, Hunter says. Dinner with just him, a round of golf. A hockey game would be best if we can get the tickets donated. I can probably manage the tickets, Danny says. If he can't get the team to donate them, he can always pay for them. And I'm sure Claude would donate one of his jerseys. Claude Giroux, he clarifies when he gets a lot of blank looks. He's the captain. People will pay for it. You should be on donations, Aaron says. Sure, Danny says. And when they divvy up tasks, he's the first name under acquiring auction donations. Make sure you find out what it's worth, Kayla says, and keep track. We want to put that information in the descriptions. I know, Danny says. I've been to a lot of silent auctions, he says with a smile, so she knows he's not upset about the direction, only that it's unneeded. Close on the road, but Danny picks up a time when he's probably not busy and calls anyway.
Are you calling me for phone sex?
Claude asks.
Because I don't have anywhere to be for an hour.
No, Danny says. I need one of your jerseys. There's a pause before Claude says.
So you can smell it and pretend I'm there while we have phone sex?
Danny laughs. We're not having phone sex. I'm working on donations for the silent auction portion of the fundraiser my group is putting on, and I need one of your jerseys. Claude asks.
What fundraiser?
So Danny explains the entirety of their plan for the fundraising dinner and silent auction for the shelter, and then asks, can we have a jersey?
Yes, of course,
Claude says.
Can we have phone sex now?
No, Danny says with a laugh. How's the road trip?
It would be better with phone sex,
Claude says.
But no, it's good. Heartsea teamed up with half the rookies and stole the other half's shoes. They went looking for them, and they were all lined up just inside the video room. While they were all out of their rooms, Deschanel snuck in and stole the other rookie's shoes.
Danny puzzles through that for a moment, and then decides to ask, you don't have that many rookies.
Well, all the guys on the ELCs,
Claude says, which does bring the number up a little.
They might as well be rookies.
Then he laughs. You're getting old.
I am not,
Claude says.
Playing with them keeps me young.
The fact that you just said that means you really are.
Do you really want to talk about age? You're almost 40.
In another year, then he says, and I'm not old. I'm mature. Claude laughs.
Is that why you won't have phone sex with me?
I don't think you grow out of phone sex, then he says. But Cameron's going to be home soon, and I need to figure out something for dinner.
You mean you need to order something?
Claude says. Maybe. Then he says. Cameron has this idea that we need to cook more, so it might be pasta instead.
I hope for both your sakes that he's in charge of that.
I can make pasta, then he says. It's just boiling water.
Uh-huh.
Claude says.
I've seen what happens to pans you try to boil water in.
That was once, Danny says, and I got distracted. Claude laughs at him.
Just admit you can't cook and let Cameron make dinner.
Maybe, Danny allows. Or maybe we'll get sandwiches or something.
Hey,
Claude says, like he's just thought of it.
Your fundraiser is going to be catered, right?
Yes, Danny says, laughing. It will be catered. Our group might do desserts, though. Not me, but one of the guys in the group bakes.
Baking business students?
He wants to open a bakery, Danny says.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Claude sounds like he doesn't quite understand it. I don't really get it either, Danny says. But I guess it's his thing. The front door opens, and there's a clatter of a teenager returning home. Cameron's home. Then he says, good thing we didn't have phone sex.
We could have been fast,
Claude says.
Say hi to Cameron for me.
Then he gets up and goes to find Cameron in the kitchen, gulping down a bottle of Gatorade. Claude says hi. Hi, Claude! Cameron calls, loud enough for Claude to hear it and start laughing in Danny's ear. I should go, Danny says. Don't forget you owe me a jersey.
I won't forget.
Claude says,
don't try to cook.
Then he hangs up on his laugh. Claude thinks we shouldn't cook. Claude's not here, Cameron says. He doesn't get a vote. We have pasta, right? Then he checks the cupboard to be sure. Yes, and sauce. He gets them both out of the cabinet and lets Cameron be the one to fill a pot with water. We can make pasta without burning it. Cameron smirks at him. I can. One time, Danny says. Cameron laughs and puts the full pot of water on the stove. I think I should be in charge of this. Danny doesn't actually object to that, so he cedes control of the kitchen to Cameron.
What are you doing for your birthday?
Claude asks when he calls from the road because he's bored. He doesn't say he's bored, but Danny knows both Claude and road trips well enough to know that's why he's calling. Cameron's here that week, Danny says, so we'll probably go out to dinner or something.
Can I come with you?
Danny chuckles. Are you inviting yourself to my birthday dinner?
I'm offering to spend your birthday with you,
Claude says. Cameron and I both have to be at school in the morning, so we can't stay out too late. Danny says. But yes, you can come to dinner. Danny picks the restaurant and Claude drives. So you can drink, he says. I have class at 8 tomorrow, Danny says. I'm not drinking much, even if it is my birthday. Claude hums. What would your drinking class say about that? Danny makes a face at him. That class is not as interesting as it sounds. Claude laughs. I still can't believe you picked that one. Danny shrugs. I had to pick one of them. What about you, Cameron? Claude asks. How's school? It's cool, Cameron says, and he recounts the indignities of high school to Claude, which mostly consists of having to get up in the morning and go to school. He's more enthusiastic when Claude asks him about hockey. The restaurant is one to go to often enough that, aside from a few looks, they don't attract much notice, and they settle into a table and their usual discussion of the menu. After they order, Claude pulls an envelope out of his pocket and hands it to Danny. "Happy birthday!" Danny opens the envelope to a card that mocks him for his age. He throws a glare at Claude before he laughs at it, and then he opens the smaller envelope inside the card. He tips the contents out into his hand. "What is it?" Cameron asks. "Tickets." Then he shows them to Cameron. "Saturday night Battle of Pennsylvania tickets." Cameron takes them from him and scrutinizes them. "These are glass seats." Claude smiles at him and at Danny. "Happy birthday." Then he reaches across the table and squeezes Claude's arm. "Thank you."
"You never get us glass seats," Cameron says to Danny. "This is awesome."
Danny plucks the tickets out of his hand and puts them back into the envelope, which he tucks into his pockets.
"Who says I'm taking you?"
Claude laughs and Cameron protests, and Danny grins at both of them. They really can't stay out too late, but they don't rush through dinner. Either Claude or Cameron tells the waiter it's Danny's birthday, so he ends up blowing out a candle on a piece of cake that he refuses to share.
"Give up now," Claude advises Cameron. "Your dad can be pretty stubborn. We'll have to order our own desserts."
They do, but they don't linger over them. Claude pays for dinner, and it's still early-ish by the time he drives them home. Claude comes in with them and hangs out in the living room with Danny after Cameron heads upstairs to finish his homework.
"So," Claude says after a while, "how about a birthday blowjob?"
Danny raises his eyebrows at Claude.
"Is that the rest of my present?"
He'll say yes, even if it isn't, but he might as well push the birthday thing.
"I expect you to get me off too," Claude says, "but yes, it can be."
"Come upstairs," Danny says, and he locks the front door and turns out all the lights before he leads Claude to his room. Claude kisses him once when they're in his room, backing him up against the door and holding him there.
"Don't do anything," Claude says. "Just stay there."
Danny can agree to that, and he helps Claude get his clothes off, but doesn't move away from the door. Claude kneels down in front of him and licks his cock, warm, wet stripes of sensation that aren't enough to get Danny off, but more than enough to make him feel really, really good. He doesn't try to rush Claude. It's his birthday, and as much as he wants to come eventually, he doesn't mind waiting. Not when waiting feels like this. Then he runs his hands through Claude's hair, not trying to do anything, just touching him. Claude stops licking him for long enough to smile up at him and turn to kiss his wrist. When he starts licking him again, he also brings his hand up and cups Danny's balls. It's enough to make Danny gasp and tip his head against the door. Claude switches strategy, putting his mouth on Danny and sucking and mouthing at his cock. It's way more touch than the licking, and Danny gasps again and puts one hand behind him, holding himself up against the door. Danny loses track of time in the sensation of Claude sucking him. Claude still isn't working to get him off anytime soon, and Danny still doesn't care. He could stay here in this haze of pleasure all night. Claude does change it up after an endless time of what he's doing, sucking him harder, teasing at the head of Danny's cock with his tongue. Danny knows he's making noise now, even though he's trying to keep it quiet. It's too good not to. It builds and builds and builds until he's coming with what he distantly hopes isn't too loud a moan. Claude sucks him through it until Danny's too sensitive for it and pushes him away. The slight push of his hand against Danny's forehead is all the energy Danny can spare for anything that's not leaning against the door so he doesn't fall down. Claude stands up, crowding him into the door, and Danny looks up at him, trying to make his eyes focus on Claude's face.
"Happy birthday," Claude says.
Danny's still trying to catch his breath, so he doesn't say anything back, just smiles tiredly.
Claude kisses the corner of his mouth. You're not going to be able to get me off, are you? I'm going to have to do it myself. Danny would protest and offer to do something in a minute, a couple of minutes, whenever he can move again, except that Claude wraps his hand around his own cock, and that's hot enough that Danny's willing to just watch him. He alternates between watching Claude's hand move on his cock and the look of pure pleasure on Claude's face. He feels like he can move a little better before Claude comes, and he leans forward, one hand still against the door for support, and kisses Claude. Claude moans into the kiss, and then kisses him harder, pushing him against the door and crowding into him. That makes it easier for Danny to put his arms around Claude and hold him close. "Are you going to come for me?" he asks. "Is that part of my birthday present?" Claude doesn't answer with words, but he groans and rests his forehead on Danny's shoulder. Danny looks down and watches him stroke his cock faster and faster, until he comes, making a mess on Danny's stomach and exhaling hard against Danny's shoulder. Danny tips Claude's head up and kisses him, even as Claude leans heavier into Danny, making Danny hold him up with the help of the door behind him. "Thank you," Danny says after a couple of minutes. "That was even better than my other present." Claude huffs out a laugh. "Those are really good tickets." Danny kisses his jaw. "That was a really good blowjob." "I have practice," Claude says. They make out for a few more minutes before Claude pulls away. Danny follows him into the bathroom to clean up. "You want to stay?" Claude leans over and kisses the corner of his mouth. "I was hoping you would ask." Danny invites his study group to come home with him to work on their econ homework. There isn't anything wrong with their usual place in Huntsman, but they're well into the semester and he thought they might like the chance to hang out in something that feels more like a home. Sarah's leaning across the table to see what Hunter's done when the front door opens. Danny doesn't pay much attention to it because he's expecting Cameron home anyway, and he's more concerned about his econ grade, but Sarah, Hunter, and Caleb all look up when the sound of the door closing is followed by two pairs of footsteps and a rustle of grocery bags. "I thought you were getting a ride with Austin," Danny says when Cameron comes in followed by Claude, both of them carrying grocery bags. "I was," Cameron says, "but Claude picked me up instead and took me to the rink to work on my wrist shot." "I'm making grilled cheese," Claude says. He looks at Sarah, Hunter, and Caleb. "There's probably enough if everyone's staying." Danny looks past him at the clock on the microwave. It is much later than they'd planned to work. "This is my son Cameron," he says. "And Claude, who thinks he still has rights to my kitchen even though he hasn't lived here for years. This is my study group, Sarah, Caleb, Hunter." Claude says, "That's no way to talk about the guy who's making you dinner." And there's a moment of confusion and handshakes. "Do you want to stay?" Danny asks. "Claude's grilled cheese is really good. Or I can drive you back now." "I vote for staying," Hunter says just after Danny stops speaking. "Sure," Caleb says with a shrug. "If you're sure you don't mind." "Of course not," Danny says. "Oh, I'm in," Sarah says. "You're the one definitely donating a jersey to our fundraiser." "That's me," Claude says. "You're all in Danny's management class, right?" Danny gets up to help Claude unpack the groceries, since Cameron put his bags down and disappeared from the kitchen. "An econ," Sarah says. "Right." Claude pauses and looks at her. "You do video games." Danny is intimately familiar with how charming Claude can be, so he's not surprised in the least that Sarah beams at him. He is surprised by what he finds in one of the grocery bags. "You brought chocolate cake into my house?" He holds up the evidence. "It's bad enough that we eat pizza all the time." Claude grins at him. It's perfect. Now we have dessert to serve your friends. Then he puts the cake in the fridge. And then you can take the leftovers home with you. Claude has a teenage rookie living with him. They can eat the rest of it. No way, Claude says. Greg's would rat me out to the trainers for sure. Isn't this a charming domestic scene? Hunter says. Then he turns to look at him. There's a mildly annoyed look on his face that Danny estimates is 90% faked, and both Thara and Caleb look like they're on the verge of laughter. We played together for 6 years, Danny says, and Claude lived here for a year, so we're pretty comfortable around each other. Sarah's look is skeptical, but the other two seem to accept that as enough of an explanation, and Danny turns back to the grocery bags he's unpacking. How's your fundraiser going? Claude asks them. Danny glances over at the others and lets them answer. Too early to tell for sure, Caleb says, but I think it's going okay. Our group isn't a disaster, at least. Our group is really slow, Hunter says. We should. Sarah rolls her eyes and cuts him off. We're not going to do everything your way. You're just going to have to get used to it. How's your season going? She asks Claude. Good, Claude says with a shrug. We're winning more than we're losing. I read your rating is way better in this year's edition of the initial game. Hunter groans. You're going to use a video game as a reference? It's the only way I know anything about hockey. Sarah shrugs, seemingly unfazed by Hunter's disapproval. I've only played it once, though. It's not really my kind of game. Not really mine either, Claude says. I'm pretty terrible at video games. Claude bought a lot of things, including Lucky Charms, which he knows Danny never keeps in the house, but he did at least also remember to get something slightly healthier to go with the sandwiches. Danny puts away the grocery bags and gathers up the salad ingredients while Claude arranges cheese, bread, and butter the way he likes them on the counter, and gets out a cutting board, a knife, and a pan. Careful, Caleb says. Sarah disapproves of people who don't play video games. I do not, Sarah says. Claude laughs. I didn't say I don't play them. I'm just not very good at them. He smirks, and Danny sees it coming before he says, Danny's worse. Yes, Danny says. I'm the usual video game tournament loser in this house, but I win 2 out of 3 at ping pong. He keeps stats, Claude says with a straight face. And now Danny's study group is staring at them again. That was only one season, Danny says. Because Shanna didn't believe Sean that I was that good. Claude pointedly looks at the others. Sarah and Caleb grin at him, and Hunter says, Why can't you be that competitive for our group? Danny shrugs. We don't need to be. We have to work together, and there isn't anything we can do about the other groups except do our best, which we can do by working together. You should listen to him, Claude says. He's coached everything from Minimites to Tier 3 juniors, and he's been the captain of an NHL team. He knows about being a team. Danny smiles at him, and he also says, Stop interfering with our group dynamics. I think we can use the help, Sarah says. Hunter is hanging on his every word. Hunter glares at her, and she just shrugs at him. Then he rinses vegetables and chickpeas, and gets out a second cutting board while he lets them work it out. My brother, Caleb says with an almost unnoticeable pause after the words, played a lot of Little League. That sounds like the kind of stuff his coach used to tell them. There you go, Claude says. It's not just me. He layers butter and cheese onto slices of bread and tosses butter into the pan. Is there anything we can do to help? Sarah asks, blinking at them like she just thought of it. Not with the food, Danny says. But if you could move your books, we'll eat at the table. He finishes making the salad, while they clean up a loud rustle of papers, books, and backpacks. "Where did you want your stuff?" Caleb asks. "I'll get it." Then he finishes the salad and brings it to the table where he swaps it for his books and notebook, which he stuffs into his backpack and moves out of the way. He also puts the ketchup on the table and explains, "Claude likes grilled cheese with ketchup. He's got us all doing it now," to the confused looks. "That sounds terrible," Hunter says flatly. "Don't knock it till you try it," Claude says. "It's good." Then he sets the table with plates and silverware, leaves a plate on the counter for Claude to pile finished sandwiches on, and gets drinks for everyone. Then he goes into the hall and calls, "Cameron, dinner!" up the stairs and waits for Cameron's acknowledging shout before he goes back into the kitchen. Sarah, Caleb, and Hunter have arranged themselves around the table, and Claude piles a couple more sandwiches on the plate and brings it to the table when he joins them. Cameron slides into the last seat and grabs a sandwich before anyone else can reach for them. He shrugs, only somewhat apologetically, when Danny gives him a look. He knows better than that. "Dig in," Claude says. "We're not formal around here." Sarah shoots a look at Danny that might have been unreadable if he hadn't spent an entire season having his teammates refer to him and Claude as a married couple, with lingering jokes that never quite died off. With that experience in mind, he ignores it and waits for the kids to pass him Tang's. There's a general lack of conversation for a bit while everyone wolfs down the sandwiches and salad. Sarah's the only one game enough to try catch up on her grilled cheese. She shrugs, says, "It's not bad," and eats the rest of her sandwich without it. "Do you cook here a lot?" Hunter asks Claude, after they've all satisfied their first ravenous hunger and are on to more leisurely seconds. "More than that," Cameron pipes up, "and he's better at it." Again, it's something Danny's used to enough that he doesn't do more than sigh and say, "I'm not that bad." "You really are," Claude says, and Cameron nods his head in agreement. "Traitors. Mostly we order in," Danny admits, more or less in answer to Hunter's question. Cameron shrugs. "It's true. At least it means we don't have to eat weird experiments like Mum makes sometimes." Sarah grins at him. "My mom does that. One time last year, we spent a whole week eating nothing but variations of asparagus." The disgusted face Cameron makes is so exaggerated, Danny's hard put not to laugh. "No," Sarah says, "it wasn't that bad. Some of it was good. She just overbought the asparagus and then had to figure out what to do with it." There's silence for a second while they all take that in. And then Caleb says, "I'll bite. Why did she overbite the asparagus in the first place?" Sarah frowns. "I don't know," she says after a moment, "but it's a family legend now." Cameron laughs. "Mom hasn't done anything like that. She did make a bunch of things from crockpot cookbook someone gave her once. I think we ate stew at her house for like 2 months before Carson said he would rather not eat than eat another meal out of it." He says after a pause, "that probably makes more sense if you knew Carson." Claude and Danny both laugh, and Claude says, "I get it, buddy." "Your turn," Sarah says to Caleb and Hunter. "Family food stories, go!" "We don't really have any," Hunter says. "Not like that." He shrugs. "We just eat normal things." Sarah rolls her eyes. "You're going to have to get some interesting stories or figure out what you think is normal that actually isn't. Caleb?"
"We always had pie for breakfast on Christmas."
Caleb looks at them, looks down at his plate, and then says, "We don't really talk anymore, and that was a thing we started doing because I asked for it when I was 4, so I don't know if they'll keep doing it."
"Shit," Sarah says. "Sorry, I didn't mean to."
Caleb waves a hand and gives her a smile that doesn't make it to his eyes.
It's painful to watch. You didn't know. I'm gay, and that wasn't okay with them, so... He shrugs again. It is what it is, and this is nice. He gestures at the rest of them. We're happy to have you here, then he says. You're welcome anytime. All of you. Claude starts laughing and shakes his head when Danny turns to look at him. And you were complaining about the parents at Kaylin's party. You're just as bad. You hate having only one kid in the house. I'm not a kid, Cameron says, and Hunter glares and says, we're his classmates, not kids. Claude keeps snickering, and Danny sighs. Please stop helping. To Hunter, he says, I played with rookies your age my whole career. I won't forget you're my team, not my kids. Danny's not sure Hunter's completely satisfied with that, but he settles down. Cameron asks Sarah about video games, and the conversation changes track. Danny keeps an eye on Caleb, but he relaxes when they don't come back to the topic of his family. Je vois ce que tu es en train de faire, Claude says to him softly in French when they take the plates into the kitchen. I'm not doing anything, Danny says. Claude laughs. You really hate having only one kid in the house, and you always take in the rookie who needs a home. Danny glances at the table where his study group seems to be perfectly happy to hang out with Cameron. Even Hunter's lost some of his air of superiority in favor of enjoying himself. I'm not adopting them. Claude nudges him. I'm going to start a pool. You'll lose. Danny makes a face at him and takes the cake to the table. Four teenagers, a hockey player, and a retired hockey player can eat a lot of cake, which means there's less left over than Danny was worried about. He still divides it up into a couple of pieces on plastic plates that he gives to Sarah, Hunter, and Caleb. Cameron disappears upstairs after dinner. Danny calls after him to do his homework, and Danny gathers up his study group to give them a ride back to campus. I'll go with you, Claude says. He shrugs when Danny throws him a questioning look. I don't have anything else to do tonight. Danny goes upstairs and knocks on Cameron's door. Claude and I are taking Sarah, Hunter, and Caleb back to campus. Cameron barely looks up from his laptop. Okay, do your homework. Cameron picks up the book sitting next to him. Yeah. That means he might or might not be working on something for school. 45 minutes, Danny says. And I'm going to check on it when I get back. Okay, Cameron says. I'll do it, don't worry. Danny refrains from the I'm your dad, it's my job to worry line. Cameron's heard it enough, and he's not really upset about any of it. Claude gets along well enough with Danny's study group, and the drive back into the city has the same kind of light conversation as most of dinner. Thank you, Sarah says when Danny drops them all off, for letting us hang out and dinner and the ride and the cake. She holds up her plate with a grin. You're welcome, Danny says. I meant it. You're welcome any time. Thank you, Caleb says, a little more subdued than Sarah. To Claude, he says, your grilled cheese is delicious. Claude grins at him. Thanks. I have a lot of practice. Hunter also says thank you and tells Claude to keep his head up. They're nice kids, Claude says when Danny turns the car toward home. They are, Danny grins. But don't let them hear you call them kids. Claude laughs. They are kids, though. They seem even younger than the rookies. Danny says, they're the same age as John Michael. But he knows what Claude means. There's a difference between guys who've been playing hockey away from their families for most of the year for years, and suburban kids living away from home for the first time. They're a good group. I'm going to start that pool, Claude says. There will be options for how many of them you're going to invite to live with you. I'm not inviting any of them to live with me, Danny says. I let you do that for a year and I never got rid of you. You love having me around. Claude reaches across the console and puts his hand on Danny's thigh,
Just admit it. I love the sex, Danny says, and he puts his hand over Claude's to keep it from moving any higher. I don't love it when you bring cake into my house.
Claude laughs and turns his hand over so they're holding hands instead.
But you put up with it, Danny says.
I don't know why. But he doesn't really mind that much, and Claude probably knows, going by the way he grins and doesn't let go of Danny's hand. He doesn't leave when they get back to the house either. Instead, he takes the dogs outside while Danny goes upstairs to check on the state of Cameron's homework.
I'm almost done, Cameron says as soon as Danny opens the door. Then he stares at Danny. Is your homework done?
Almost, Danny tells him. No video games until you're done.
Cameron rolls his eyes. You either.
Danny grins and shuts his door. He does still have some reading to do for his art history class, so he drags out his textbook when he gets downstairs and settles onto the couch with the book and his notebook for the class.
Notes on paper, Claude says when he comes in, the dogs trailing behind him. Very old-fashioned.
Classic, Danny says. I have to do this reading before I can hang out with you anymore.
Sure, Claude says.
He sits down on the other end of the couch and tucks his feet under Danny's thighs while he pokes at his phone. Danny gives him a half-hearted disapproving look that does nothing to make Claude move and finds himself resting his hand on Claude's ankles as he reads. Danny closes his books when he gets to the end of the chapter he's supposed to be reading. Claude looks up from his phone and asks,
Done?
For tonight. Danny puts the book and notebook down and tips his head against the back of the couch.
Just like hockey, a little every day.
Claude wriggles his toes under Danny's thighs.
There's probably a game on.
Danny's closer to it, so he picks up the remote, but hands it to Claude. Claude flips channels for a dizzyingly long time and only settles on a basketball game when Danny flicks his ankle. It's not a great game, but Danny's spent most of the day on schoolwork, and it's nice to do something he doesn't have to think about. Claude doesn't last long anyway. After they've watched most of a quarter, he nudges Danny with his toes.
This is boring. Want to go upstairs and fuck instead?
Danny snorts.
How can I resist an invitation like that?
Claude grins at him and leans across the length of the couch to kiss him.
It'll be more fun than basketball.
Lots of things would be more fun than basketball. Claude stops just leaning and scoots his whole body down the couch. Then he cups Danny through his jeans.
I don't have to skate tomorrow. We can do whatever you want.
Danny tips Claude's head down and kisses him, slow and dirty.
You should have started with that. I'm saying it now.
Claude's lips are red and full from kissing, and his tone is low enough to make Danny shiver. Danny runs his hands over Claude's shoulders.
Upstairs, and be quiet. Cameron's here.
Cameron is still, going by the light coming from under his door, awake. But it's not that late yet, and Danny decides to trust him to go to bed at a reasonable hour. He's old enough to deal with the consequences if he doesn't.
What are you going to do with me?
Claude asks when Danny all but pushes him into his room. Danny rakes his eyes over Claude. He's in just jeans and a worn-off long-sleeve Flyers tee, but he looks unfairly good in it.
Take off your clothes.
Claude smiles just short of a smirk and strips. He's not quite making a show out of it, but he pulls out one piece of clothing at a time, which keeps it slow. Danny's breathing is rough by the time Claude's naked.
What about you?
Claude asks.
In a minute.
Getting naked himself isn't as important as getting his hands on Claude. Danny runs his hands over Claude's chest, strokes down his arms, kisses him and presses close. The last makes Claude groan.
Danny.
Claude pushes his erection into Danny's hip. You're killing me. You said we could do whatever I want. I didn't mean this. Claude gropes him, one hand on his ass and the other on his hip. Yes, you did. Then he keeps touching Claude, but he lets Claude undress him until he does, until they're both naked, and Claude's erection is pressing into his bare hip. Come on, Claude says. You're going to do more than just kiss me, right? Then he laughs. I like kissing you. And he does it again to prove it. But I want to fuck you. Claude shivers and says, yes. Like that wasn't what he was angling for in the first place. Then he lets go of him and goes to the nightstand. When he turns around, Claude is on his hands and knees on the bed. Then he drops the condom on the bed and flips open the lube. You want me to fuck you hard? He asks, while he lets the lube warm a little on his fingers. Yes, Claude says. He keeps his hips steady but turns his upper body to look at Danny. I don't have to skate tomorrow. You can. Then he pats his ass with his free hand and then fingers Claude open carefully. He might want it hard, but Danny's not going to hurt him. Plus, he likes the way Claude fucks himself back on his fingers when he decides Danny's going too slow. Claude only gets more insistent, and Danny's erection is no less so. Danny pulls his fingers out of Claude with an apologetic pat on his ass. It takes a minute to swipe his fingers clean and get the condom on, and then he presses slowly into Claude. Claude stays still until Danny's all the way inside in him, and then he shoves his hips back, not that there's anywhere for him to go. Then he digs his fingers into Claude's hips. Give me a second, he says, trying to hold onto enough control not to come right then, and I'll do it. Claude stays pressed as tightly to him as possible, but he doesn't try to make it happen beyond saying, hurry up. Then he bends down and kisses the back of Claude's neck, and then he pulls back and pulls halfway out of Claude before slamming back in. Claude groans, but he does it quietly, and he keeps the volume down while Danny fucks him. Claude wanted it hard, so that's what Danny gives him, gripping Claude's hips tight and putting his weight behind every thrust into him. When he's getting close, Danny wraps one hand around Claude's cock and uses the force of his thrusts to let Claude fuck his hand. Claude comes with a choked-off cry, and Danny thrusts into him a few more times before he comes to. Danny pulls out of Claude, rubs his hip, and takes care of the condom, washing his hands, and bringing Claude a damp washcloth to clean him up. Claude's already half asleep when Danny gets back in bed. It's okay, right? Claude says, more or less. Yeah, Danny says. I'm not going to kick you out.